Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
the show where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
The three-person bump is real, ladies and gentlemen. Real.
It's real and it's spectacular.
Or it's the Lindsay bump, or the Queen Kel bump, or the Dan bump.
That's right, or all of the above, but I'll take it. I'll take those compliments.
We're moving on up. Thanks, listeners. We increased significantly in the last week. Let's keep it going. Not that numbers matter. We just want to make sure that more people get to learn about Milwaukee's abundant arts and culture.
Numbers matter, but we just want more people listening.
Speak of numbers, let's talk about news at the state level, since I think that resonated with folks. We're not gonna spend a lot of time doing news, but I think it's of note that we just had our state's budget announced by the governor, which will begin the process of passing a budget. And one thing that parallel with this is the fact that we care a lot about public funding for the arts. We're really big into it because Wisconsin is ranked what? 50th in the country.
No.
Breaking news. What?
We are now 49th. Yay.
Yay. Mission accomplished banner falls. Lindsay lands the plane.
Not for a great reason.
Not for a great reason.
Well, here's the wah-wah, the sad trumpets. We are now 49th because Arizona decided to zero out their public funding for the arts. So we jumped up by nature of somebody else falling to our spot. So for all intents and purposes, we're still 50th.
Which means we still need to put pressure on, what does it mean to increase public funding for arts and culture? And so looking at Governor Evers' budget, that was an opportunity to weigh in on that.
Right? Yeah, the governor's budget, continues to be like an investment in our arts and culture infrastructure, which is important. It could be more, right? I mean, if you think about the scale of what our arts and culture infrastructure puts into the state, right? At the state level, it represents almost $10 billion worth of state economic impact, represents about 3.1% of our state's GDP. As an industry, it's bigger than beer, bigger than biotech and paper, employs almost 10,000 people. We're a real industry. And like other industries, right, our state's arts and culture infrastructure really needs the partnership from our state government to recognize and help us grow.
That's right. So in response to the budget coming out, our resident policy wonk, David, wrote an op-ed, which you can go and read in full over on Urban Milwaukee. We'll pop the link in the show description. Give it a read.
Thanks, Lindsay, for helping us get through like a pretty big week. I mean, the op-ed dropped this week, which was super fun. We did an interview on Lake Effect this last week, which will run, I think, soon.
It was also so yay for us for getting that op-ed. Where did it get picked up by, the op-ed?
Yeah, it was in Urban Milwaukee. Nice. Parts of it in a combination with another great interview about some of our public health and art work that's coming up. We're in the Business Journal.
Yeah, the Biz Journal. But we'll talk about that in a future pod. It was a big week for us also because, Lindsay, we got to see the Hone in a new way this week as well.
That's right. So as we've mentioned before on this podcast, in 2021, Light the Hone is doing a program called Shine a Light. And each month they feature a different nonprofit, and in collaboration with us, those nonprofits have been matched with an artist. And then also for one night each month,
one night
gets
only
lit up in beautiful colors selected by that nonprofit. So on Thursday night, on the 25th, we saw the Hone lit up in purple and pink and blue, some of our brand colors, which was neat. I said to myself, it's a good thing I picked some relatively nice brand colors that look okay on a bridge, because you never know. You never know. So we really enjoyed that. That was a real, really special treat.
It's beautiful.
And yeah.
Yeah.
So. It was Lindsay and Kenita's plan was to get us all out there at like 4:45 to watch when the lights go on at 5:06 or 30 minutes before sunset. And so we all get there, and it's like bright as day.
I know.
We're all standing out there, and like, thankfully it was nice, right? But once the sun started going down, it started to get really cold,
It
right?
started real cold, real cold. But it looked beautiful. And as the night went on, even more beautiful. It was great to see the shares and people
It's
sharing
also like
photos.
really cool that like the control, right, for the lights are literally on their telephones, right? Like on the light the hone folks' telephone. Like we're standing out there, once the lights actually came on, like 5:45, we're waiting. And it's like, still the regular yellow moving lights. Got to text over to light the hone. Hey folks, is the design running? We're out here and it still looks yellow. And within a couple seconds, got the reply. Was going to turn it on at 6. 1 second. David gets what David wants. And the lights literally went off and they came right back on, right? It was incredible how quickly they turned it on.
It's not like the lights at the gym, like the old
No,
high school
right. It's
gyms
just
where it takes forever to
like,
like doo, doo.
just immediately.
It was like boom. I'm just glad he didn't turn on his Ring app and like talk to the person in the front of his house.
I didn't mind being out there in the cold because in addition to the lights, I got maybe as excitedly a birthday balloon from the team, which was
Happy
really
birthday,
fun.
Lindsay.
Thank you. Getting
That's right.
old. Getting
How,
old.
by the way, how did you see Sammer's drone? It was dark by the time I left. Like,
It
what?
has little lights on it and it
Oh.
has a name. She has a name and my apologies, I do forget it right now. So Sammer, tweet at us. Remind me what
Yes.
the name is.
Sammer shot some incredible drone footage for us and some great photos of the bridge last night. Just incredibly beautiful, and what a great program to shine a light with the with, from our friends at Light the Hone on the importance of our city and region's arts and culture. And they'll be doing this for every month, right? From now until December, they will be shining a light on a different nonprofit organization and the incredible work that they are doing in Milwaukee.
Speaking of shining a light, somebody in this room got some nice shine from Biz Times, Milwaukee, named among the minority executives of distinction in town. One of us on that got that.
And it was not me. It
Wasn't
wasn't
Lindsay, and
no.
you can tell by the hurt in my voice that it wasn't me.
Yeah, what a great honor to be on a list with so many incredible other executive. I mean, the minority or not, right? These are all great executives in our region, in our city, and what a great honor to be included with them. And many great friends, right? Like on that list. So Kendra Whitlock Ingram at the Marcus Center for the Performing Arts, Arvind Gopalaratnam, who's at the Bucks Foundation and also on the board for the Wisconsin Conservatory of Music. A lot of really cool folks on that list. And just what an honor to be on. What an honor to be included. You know who wasn't included was Mac's nomination for me, was not included in
I wrote a
the.
very stirring nomination for you. They used Deanna Tillish, our board chair, which I thought was really well written. Obviously, Deanna, come on. But I knew it wasn't mine because it didn't say, Dear Leader allows us to look at him directly for a few minutes
And
every
three
morning. And
servings of millet
we just
gruel.
smile and we just take in his grace. Dear
That's right.
Leader allows us gruel to give us substance as we sit at our cubes all day. So that
You
wasn't
sit
there.
in the
It wasn't
cubes
there.
of your home.
The cubes of our home. So I can't believe that was not quoted at all. But
Shocking. Yeah.
that's shocking. All right. Speaking of shocking, I don't have a segue there.
Not a good transition there.
Not a good transition at all. I do want to transition to this. Our guest coming up after the banter here is Dan Schaefer, who writes for the Recombobulation Area, an independent weekly opinion column and news source, independent journalism product.
An IJP, if you will.
IJP. Those of us in the business column, IJPs. But before we get to him, the reason why it kind of come to mind is because we also wanted to introduce a little bit about our hosts, because we do have a new host, Lindsay Sheridan. She's new to the team,
Still fresh. Yeah.
still fresh. That's why we're getting that bump. But they need a little bit know more about you. So I wanted to talk a little bit, Lindsay, you had a resolution that you were taking up. in 2021.
You know, yeah, somehow I did add a resolution to the whole like being in a pandemic and being at home mix. And I just been eating real healthy these last couple months.
That's awesome.
Mac tried to throw a wrench in that when he DoorDashed Krispy Kreme donuts to
I was recognizing how awesome you were producing the work groups session that we did on StreamYard,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I said, well, I'd like to thank people with DoorDash because it's really easy. This is not a plug. And yeah, I sent you the Krispy Kreme donuts and you immediately texted me like, don't do this. Stop it. Cease and desist. And I'm like, okay.
But wait, so the order had been put in, the dashing had begun when the
dashing
when,
had begun. I had to like,
you're on actually, the road.
I diverted that DoorDasher to go into the sun, like kind of like in Deep Impact, they had to get the asteroid or something.
So the missiles had gone, yeah, right? Exactly. So the Star Wars is like,
that's right. Armageddon. I dispatched Bruce Willis and Ben Affleck to jump on the DoorDasher and mm-hmm. missiles into them. So yeah,
but,
so to make it up to you,
that's right. You really came through with more food-related gifts. For my birthday, I'm getting a shipment of Magic Spoon.
Cereal, yes.
That's right, which you may know from our competitors.
Our competitors, yeah. Our rivals, Pod Save America, who often...
Another iconic trio.
Shill, yeah, yeah. They shill for them. But I said, you know what? I'm going to get you some Magic Spoon to make up. So hopefully that's a redemption. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Lindsay, look forward to getting your takes on the frosty, the fruity, mm-hmm. the coca and the usual.
Can't wait. The one.
Yeah. Plant-based protein, right?
Plant-based protein. Keto-friendly.
Enough.
Buy now at magicspoon.com.
Enough fiber for everybody in the Magic Spoon?
Enough fiber. Because I know that matters to you, David. You're big on fiber.
Well, you know, apparently not enough people eat. Most Americans don't eat enough of this very humble superfood known as fiber.
Listeners, this is a real inside take at an Imagine KE Hang, because there's a lot of talk of grams of food things and whatnot around.
Mostly driven by our own MacArthur Antigua.
Well, I just want you to know that I'm not bought by Big Fiber like David is, and he's bought and paid for.
Nobody's bought by Big Fiber. That's the problem. Big Fiber needs to do some more work.
Not enough people got to be bought.
Big Fiber needs more lobbying power in DC.
So speaking of food, Our guest Dan Schaefer had some interesting food takes, where he detailed on the recombobulation area, how he ranked food pastries, right, Dan?
Wisconsin bakery treats, and he actually ranked the cream puff after an enormous cliff, number four. So he has Kringle, Cruller, Punchki, enormous cliff, cream puff, which is. I mean, that's rough, right? I mean, the Wisconsin State Fair cream puff is like the thing, right? That's the thing you think about when you think about our state, isn't it? Because you got the dairy, you got the
what's
pastry.
Great is we're not going to even ask him about this because we have so many issues to talk about.
Yeah, like real issues,
flack.
Right?
He's going to get some flack on this, and that's exactly why we teed it up this way. By the way, Lindsay or David, to feed off that, are there any Wisconsin controversy? Because I like to use the UK version, controversy. That you have food takes that might say controversial. What would be yours?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really understand or enjoy it too much. The Wisconsin old fashioned. I more prefer the old fashioned that the rest of the world drinks, but I am afraid to order that at a Wisconsin bar for fear of judgment. So I have to go out of state to.
So here's Lindsay driving to like Schaumburg to grab a regular old fashioned.
She's grabbing up some Portillo's and some old fashioned.
Or she takes the Great Lakes Express to Michigan to grab an old fashioned.
That's right. She go north
back.
Sounds like a good vacation. Yeah.
She go to Des Moines. Uh-huh. Drive down to Des Moines.
So for those of us who only live in Wisconsin, can you describe the difference between a Wisconsin old fashioned and a Wisconsin?
One sucks and the other doesn't. David, did you not listen to her for the last 5 minutes?
I mean, my understanding of it, right, is that a Wisconsin old fashioned, you know, has the whiskey, but then also has like a solid dash of like a 7-Up or like a sparkling soda water or something. Right. And a non-Wisconsin old fashioned is like just pure alcohol, like no watering it down.
You would think that would be in our character in the Wisconsin old fashioned. It's just all alcohol. That's right.
Yeah.
David, what's your controversial food take? Wisconsin food take.
Yeah, cheese curds are just nuggets of cheese. That they're not super special. They're just I don't understand what a cheese curd, like, why it's different than just, you know, a nugget of cheese that's cut in, you know, different ways.
Cheese makers, for your consideration, rename it cheese nugget.
Chug it. Call it a chug it. You're welcome. You're cheese welcome. Nugget. Cheese nugget. There we industry.
Go. That's my next career. I'm gonna work at the cheese at Big Cheese. Make sure.
Well,
that
I appreciate you guys being so curds go and sharing to your nuggets. Takes because you're putting yourselves out there, and I appreciate that. And again,
what about you, Mac? No controversial food takes. Like,
God, no, no. I think Wisconsin cuisine's just revered and phenomenal, actually. So I don't. Why would I say anything bad about it? It's amazing.
Says the man who hates Christmas music.
That's right. Yeah, in all candor, I lost a bunch of endorsements on the war on Christmas, so I'm just trying to walk it back by loving Wisconsin food. So okay. I'm ready to go next fish fry. That being said, we're going to pivot to our guest, Dan Schaefer. And he writes and publishes The Recombobulation Area, a weekly political opinion column. Prior to starting his own publication, Schaefer was a reporter and editor at Seattle Magazine, Milwaukee Business Journal, Milwaukee Magazine, Biz Times, Milwaukee, and Third Coast Digest. He's written for The Daily Beast, Wiz Politics, and Milwaukee Record. He's currently a stay-at-home dad for his two daughters. He lives in Milwaukee, and when he's available on Twitter, you can holler at him at Dan R. Schaefer. After the break, Dan Schaefer.
I am Sam, Sam, I am that Sam, I am that Sam, I am. I do not like that Sam, I am. Do you like green eggs and ham? I do not like them, Sam, I am. I do not like green eggs and ham. Would you like them here or there? I do not.
Dan
like
Schaefer, thanks for joining us on Imagine This Podcast.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and congratulations again on the new addition to your family.
Thank you so much.
I think you tweeted that out at the turn of the year, like, I'm going to lay low for a couple, I follow you on Twitter, and you're like, hey,
yeah,
I'm going to lay low a couple of weeks, and now you're in the mix, you're 6 weeks in.
Now I'm back in the mix, yeah, but yeah, you know, just the newborn phase, the time of joy and sleeplessness, you know.
I'm surprised you're here with us and actually putting together complete sentences. That's incredible.
That's good stuff.
I'm surprised too. I mean, it's early. We could, you know.
You're still on adrenaline. You're still on adrenaline, yeah. Right now. So you take a real turn. Is this your second, I believe, or first?
Yep, second girl.
Second. So yeah, right now you're running man to man defense, and one more, it's you're in the power zone. Play. You're the relentless power play. So you're probably keeping. You're probably gonna keep it at man to man for a while, right?
And I'm also a stay at home dad. So I'm.
You're on it. Know, yeah, you're.
I'm
on
gonna
it.
Be. Yeah. Yeah. You're yeah. On yeah.
It.
So.
You're on. Well, hey, thanks for joining us. So excited to have you on the pod here to talk about what you know really well is the sort of the state and the city politics, especially with the nuances of the new budget being announced and all that. But before we get into your wheelhouse, we're going to turn back the clock. Tell us a story about an arts or cultural experience that left a strong imprint on you. Might have been a book you read or a performance you witnessed. Maybe it's something you created. Or performed, you know, we want to know is what's an early memory that sticks with you around that?
Ooh, early memory. Yeah. So I am I'm a big music guy. That's my art form of choice.
Okay.
And I would say, you know, it's like probably, you know, once I got to high school, music kind of became all I cared about. So like once I, you know, I was grew up in the early 2000s, high school in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And so once I got access to Napster.
And, okay. I was wondering to date you on the technology spectrum, right? So yeah, you're ripping MP3s. Like you're just taking it, right? You're just taking it.
Yeah. Once I got access to Napster and Kazaa and all the other stuff.
LimeWire.
LimeWire.
Yeah.
And you're hoping so your computer doesn't get like the STDs. That's all you're hoping. Yeah. Is like your computer's not getting STDs and what you're pulling down, right? Just hoping.
Right. I may have had to buy a new hard drive for my dad's computer, but that's another story.
It's a different story.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think once I, you know, once I kind of got introduced to that world, I'm a rock music fan you know, I think once I reached high school and started seeing live music in person, That kind of became all I cared about doing.
What was it? What was a show? What was a show that still sticks with you? Set, a particular like venue.
Let's see.
No judgment.
Say,
we're not going
to
react.
I mean, I'm going to try not to embarrass myself, but I saw the White Stripes at the Rave Ballroom.
Woo! That's okay. That's pretty good.
You know, that was, I think, like my junior or senior year of high school.
Yeah.
And I saw a lot of shows at the Rave in high school. I was actually in a band and we played at the Rave a couple times.
Wow. What was the band? This was not on your bio.
No. I don't talk about it much. But on arts podcasts, when you ask me about, ask me such questions, that's where it's going to come up. So I played bass in a band called Capital Drive. I lived in Milwaukee.
Yes.
Me and my buddies from Brookfield, we started a band and we played in high
school.
Bass? Early part of college. Yeah.
Your bass? Or the other
I was bass and everybody else in the band did multiple things, but I was like only bass.
Okay.
they didn't let me near the microphone to do any singing.
Oh, okay. No? You're not mic?
No.
Not even a backing vocals? Not even backing vocals?
Like, just for like banter. That's where I was.
In between songs, keeping the energy up.
If I find Capital Drive on Spotify, which I probably won't, but if I did, what would be the other artists I might like? You know, if you might like blank.
I don't know. I was really into a band called Incubus in high school.
Oh, yes.
You remember them at all?
Drive is the track
that was one of them. Our drummer was like a huge Dave Matthews Band guy.
Okay.
So we were it was kind of like a jumble of stuff. And it was, I don't know. We mostly had fun playing just like goofy little spots in Brookfield. So,
but you also played the Rave. You got to play the Rave.
Well, we did play the Rave a couple times. Yeah,
that's opening pretty awesome.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah,
yeah. So that was
not a lot of groups get this. Not a lot of people on our podcasts get to say, "Oh yeah, I played the Rave."
Playing the Rave as a 17-year-old was a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love it. I love this question. That's what you get to unfold some of our guests, right?
So how do you go from playing the Rave at 17 to, you know, dad with the second six week old? Like, what was the diversion point where you're like, you know, maybe music just professionally isn't in the cards for me, or do you still feel like it is?
I don't really play too much anymore. A couple of my friends have played who were in the band had careers more in music. But I, you know, I'm a better writer than a bass player. so I was always kind of catching up to the rest of the guys in the band. I didn't really know how to like read music and do stuff. I just kind of played along. Went to college and I've always been really into politics.
Yeah.
So I started I started as a political science major when I went to college. So I was doing like the George Bush era in a band / in an indie band / anti-Bush, whatever, stuff around the time.
You and Jason Isbell, right? You and Jason Isbell,
right.
As well as other. Definitely the same sentence.
Yeah.
So, Dad, you had a stint in Seattle, but really, you That's spent right, 11 yeah. years here in Milwaukee, writing in different roles. And so what's the story of Milwaukee that you tell to outsiders or people that have, you know, that are like, what is the story you tell about Milwaukee? If I've never heard of it, or I don't know about the city outside of Laverne and Shirley, like what would I?
No, I think I think as most people who live in Milwaukee would say, it's just like a beautiful, underappreciated gem of a city in the Midwest that also has some pretty real problems.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, over the last 11 years since I've been a journalist in mostly Milwaukee, I think, you know, the story has changed to be a bit of a more positive one than maybe it was. I think, you know, kind of the way I think of Milwaukee is, especially having, you know, lived somewhere else for a little while, is like Milwaukee is a big, small town.
Yeah.
Is, you know, like when I lived in Seattle, I would go out and everybody is from everywhere else. It's a city of mostly transplants at this point. Mm-hmm. When you go out in Milwaukee, there's a pretty good chance you're going to run into somebody you know.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty special thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is you know, a very unique quality that Milwaukee has, that big small town. And so so when I explained it to Milwaukee to people in Seattle when I was there, I would talk about it as being a big small town.
Some people put like Milwaukee, and I'd say pre-Amazon Seattle, like almost in the same sentence in some ways, you know, like, and again, I don't know if you experienced that. And, or like, again, I'm going to name some cities and people are like Austin in some ways, or like kind of like, or like small geographically, which allows the cross, but not necessarily, again, I named Seattle and Austin, both cities that have over run amok by tech companies and have changed it. But, but I think there are times, right, this sort of intimate, and almost Milwaukee's a little bit a stage before that. It could. And I imagine some big company like, wow, you have access to all that fresh water and there's all that cheap land. Huh, I wonder. You know, like it's we're not too far away, then possibly that could happen. Not saying Amazon's gonna open here, but I don't know if that does that resonate with you, Dan, or no?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like that, you know, that when you're kind of looking through different size cities, like Seattle size wise isn't all that different from Milwaukee. I mean, the metro area is much bigger now. But just like the actual city itself is probably in that, you know, close to 600,000-700,000 people range. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's right there. I think Milwaukee is kind of like in that next tier where you're thinking about cities that, you know, the Seattles and the Austins and the Denvers of the world have kind of broken out over the past couple decades. Mm-hmm. And then you have kind of like the next group of it where it's like, I don't know, Milwaukee and Baltimore and mm-hmm. some of the other cities that have a lot of history to them, mm-hmm. But are, you know, dealing with kind of a different set of problems and stuff mm-hmm. like that too. I think, you know, one thing about if you're just making the Seattle comparison too, it's just like Milwaukee is a much more diverse city. Mm-hmm. You know, it's obviously, you know, we see how it ranks as one of the most segregated cities. Mm-hmm. And obviously that is something you can always point to as perhaps the biggest problem that the city faces, but it is, you know, you can't be segregated without being a little bit diverse first, right? So, mm-hmm. So in Seattle, it's, you know, they're not fighting the same historic battles that are woven into the fabric of the city that Milwaukee is in a lot of ways, being the diverse city that it is. So, I think that's kind of, you know, you point to those cities like Austin or Portland or Seattle and stuff like that. They're not as diverse. So I think they're not weighed by some of the similar challenges.
That's right. That's right.
You know, when you think about those other cities, right, I think, and especially now, as I think about like the future for Milwaukee, right, I think the thing that COVID has shown us, right, is that like, we're sort of entering into this like regionless economy, right, whereby like, companies like Starbucks or Google or whoever don't have to, like, they can locate almost anywhere and draw talent from anywhere, right? So you don't actually have to like move to a place to work there. You could live in Milwaukee and work at any company, right? So long as they have the policies to sort of like allow that to happen. And I think it's our bet, right, that like in this regionless economy, that it's kind of like arts and culture, quality of life, those sorts of things that sort of like make a place worth living in. And so I guess from your perspective, having been here for this amount of time, where do you see sort of the future of our region given that, you know, we have we're kind of a company town, right? Whereby, you know, you have like these institutions that have come up and have like, you know, have sort of like run the city, like thinking like Northwestern Mutual, like, you know, Rockwell, all these major companies. Now, as we're sort of like not sort of bound, right, by place and geography, how do we continue to compete with our neighbor to the south and our neighbor to the west in Minneapolis, or even the nearer west in Madison, right, which is a much more growing, seeming like a growing or a much more a faster growing tech hub?
Yeah, that's such a good question. You know, and there's so much uncertainty around everything right now with COVID, with people getting back into their offices eventually, maybe somehow differently. But you know, I think it's like you mentioned, those quality of life advantages that Milwaukee needs to invest in and bring to the forefront and really showcase. You know, I think, you know, one of the things that I wrote a lot when I was at Milwaukee Magazine a few years back. I wrote a lot about the arena debate and the downtown reinvention debate. Yeah. So this was about 2015. So it was 2014, 2015. So I was writing about the arena. I was writing about the streetcar. I was writing about the Grand Avenue, like all these different things that, you know, needed to be addressed. And if they weren't going to be addressed, Milwaukee was going to fall even further back.
Right.
Losing an NBA team would not put us on the verge of making any jumps anywhere. Losing, you know, having big holes in the middle of your downtown is not a good thing. So I think, you know, a lot of that has been addressed. And, but I think, you know, there's some other things that, that kind of, I learned when I was reporting that story that I didn't quite associate Milwaukee with. And I think Milwaukee could benefit from, you know, kind of building that up a little bit more, like the restaurant scene is one thing that I think, you know, could be viewed as a real advantage for Milwaukee. And Milwaukee was opening, that was right at the time where Milwaukee was opening a ton of restaurants. And there at a faster, there was like more restaurants opening in Milwaukee per capita than like New York or Chicago. And so I think there's things like that, that can bring that advantage. And then I think it's, you know, it's so hard not to associate a lot of Milwaukee's disadvantages with the political turmoil that this state has been in for the entirety of the time that I've been reporting in, in Milwaukee. And I mean, of all 11 years to be kind of considering this in a big picture sense, you know, there's been so much political turmoil with that. And, you know, hopefully that, that era, we can put that air behind us eventually. We're not there, obviously, not there right now.
We're pivoting to that. We're talking about Governor Evers' new budget, right? It's sort of might be different from like years past. And Dan, let me say again, I moved to the area in 2011. Okay, so I've lived, is that right? It feels longer. But yeah, it's something like that. But I guess the thing I'm thinking about, right, is, so here's a very simplistic analysis I have, and you can check me if I'm wrong. Right. For Milwaukee needed to do those things that you talked about, huge capital projects, or at least stemming the tide and like converting losses into something possible. Right. And things like that require almost like statewide support. And there wasn't that necessary cooperation from Madison, all that eagerness to allow Milwaukee to do those things, even though in some theory, one might argue what's good for Milwaukee is good for the state of Wisconsin. So it's almost like it's fighting itself on some level. Is that, am I dangerous? Am I running with scissors, Dan?
I think that's the right assessment.
Okay. I don't want to be oversimplistic, but sometimes from a distance, and again, I just moved from the Twin Cities where it really felt like you wouldn't have that sense of animosity between St. Paul and Minnesota. Obviously there's angst with the river and the, you know, Twin Cities, right? Like siblings, they fight in some ways.
Sure.
At the end of the day, what's good for Minneapolis is great for St. Paul and vice versa. I never got that sense from Milwaukee and the state at large.
But isn't like the urban-rural divide, or I'd sort of broadly characterize as the urban and rural divide here in our state, kind of almost like the test lab for the polarization throughout our nation? Like I moved here in 2010, right? So around the same time.
Yeah.
And we moved from California, and it felt like, in Los Angeles particularly, and it felt like, and I don't know if this was like true of my experience, but like, it seemed like California, despite the fact that it's, you know, mostly red with like really deep blue pockets throughout the state, it sort of mirrored Wisconsin, right? But when I got here, it really felt like there was a marked divide between the rest of the state, Madison and Milwaukee, and even Madison and Milwaukee had a little bit of beef, right? And it's like, it just didn't make, it felt strange. And I still haven't been able to make heads or tails of it, of, you know, being here for the last decade.
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly kind of been the test lab for a lot of the different conservative policies that have led to that division, I think in a lot of ways too.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, up until very recently, you know, you talked about the divisions in the state being an urban-rural thing. In Milwaukee, it was very much an urban-suburban thing up until, I would say, the last maybe 4 or 5 years, you know. And, you know, you talked about Milwaukee being like the most politically polarized metropolitan area in the country, where you have the reddest parts of the state in, right, you know, Waukesha County, Washington County, wherever, and then the bluest parts of the state in the heart of Milwaukee. That I think this most recent election, if you look at the results from, you know, Biden's victory in the state, and some of the other, you know, kind of down ballot state legislative races as well, as you have the suburbs that are starting to be a little bit more blue. Not blue to the sense where Biden won Waukesha County,
right,
but blue to the sense where, you know, he did much better in Waukesha County than Barack Obama
ever
did.
Yeah, or ever. That, right.
You know, John Kerry did.
Yeah.
So, you know, and even kind of within the inner ring Milwaukee County suburbs that have been, you know, kind of more split or more, more Republican leaning in, has shifted significantly in recent years. And one real example of that is Wauwatosa. Mm-hmm. Wauwatosa, you know, almost went for Romney in 2012 and right, voted like 66% for Biden this mm-hmm year. It's one of the biggest shifts in the state, if not the biggest shift in the state. It happened in Wauwatosa. So you see in places like Wauwatosa, Whitefish Bay, you know, parts of Brookfield, even, you know, and some of the like more North Shore suburbs, yep, even some of the southern suburbs are starting to even out a little bit. Greenfield, I think, tipped for Biden for the first time in you know, forever. So I think you're starting to see that divide take a different shape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether that sustains through another election cycle, that remains to be seen. But, you know, you look across the whole course of the state, the only three state legislative, state assembly races, the flip, were all in kind of that Milwaukee, Waukesha County suburb area. So I think that's where you're seeing a real change. And I think that, you know, that presents an opportunity too. You know, if we're having a less polarized region, maybe we can have some of these less polarized conversations, even as the state kind of is at war with itself all the time. You know, maybe within the region, there's people who are, you know, on a little bit more toward the middle, you know, demographics, age, things like that, that are shifting, and you're seeing those manifest as well.
Do you think, you know, in your time covering politics and the sort of political dynamics in our state, that like some of the underdog mentality that I think Milwaukee and the region has is like, you know, we don't get to have nice stuff, whether it's the new basketball arena or the
DNC. The DNC actually showing up.
The DNC, or even lighting the bridge, right? The bridge yesterday or last week was lit up in our colors, and that took some time to get done. Is there like, is that all about just sort of this view that like there's not enough resources and we need to do we can't sort of have sort of nice things because we have little resources, we can't tax ourselves, we can't raise revenue, all of that stuff? Or is there something actually sort of characterologically about our region that's like, you know, we don't actually deserve nice things?
Well, I don't know about that. I think sometimes the problem is that people, you know, will kind of, you know, it's a very Midwestern thing to not want conflict, you know? and I think sometimes Milwaukee, you know, it has been in such a position for so long where it's just like, you know, we have so many people ripping on Milwaukee from so many different directions that, you know, the state has, or the city has just a false narrative around it. But I think there's also a time where you see that sometimes Milwaukee doesn't put up a fight and defend itself. And I think that is a real problem. And I think that is the type of thing where, you know, you mentioned the potential sales tax, right, issue. You know, I would love to see some of the business community in this town. I know they're backing it, but I would love to see a more visible attempt to get this done and give Milwaukee some local control over what it can, over its own finances and its own future. And I think, you know, another recent example of that is, you know, what happened with the election and all of these lawsuits trying to toss out all of Milwaukee's votes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't have these people sticking up for Milwaukee and saying, hey, our votes count too.
Yeah.
Our votes count the same as yours do. And I, you know, I feel like Milwaukee sometimes, the more traditional parts of Milwaukee, maybe the older business community world is unwilling to have that debate and have that fight. And I think that's wrong. I think they need to recognize that they're, you know, things aren't going to change if they're not willing to fight for it, willing to defend the city when it's being attacked for the absurd reasons, you know.
That's a really fascinating point. I never thought about it like that, where it's like the veracity of our voting, the fact that challenges, it was pretty quiet, right? The defense of it, right? Yeah. I think it speaks to that, right? That, you know, it's almost saying, hey, our people are worthy, you know, our people are more than worthy. And yeah, look at who was quiet during the time that kind of tells you something.
Exactly.
You got some receipts. So let's talk about today, right? And again, what really attracted me to your your feed was you're very clear about how our state legislature works or didn't work, you know, and you know, especially during one of the biggest national crises, right? And I think it's so here we are at a state level, which impacts us here in Milwaukee County, right? And would love for just to hear your takes on sort of what do you think the way that Governor Evers has laid out his budget, which obviously was not going to pass cleanly, but it's a starting point, right? What does it tell you about the state's priorities? And was there anything about it that surprised you or stuff that, oh, okay, this tax, like they telegraphed this, and what do you got here? We invite you to tee off.
Yeah, I don't think it was a big surprise what he came out with for his budget. You know, I think most Democratic politicians at the state level are going to support healthcare and education. Mm-hmm. And those were kind of the main takeaways when you know, just do like the top headline of what the budget did. It had more funding for healthcare and education. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe some more in terms of like the, you know, the business side of things, more small business, Main Street type stuff, the type of voters that the Democrats, you know, try to work with. And, you know, I didn't think there were a whole lot of surprises. You know, you seeing the kind of initial reaction from the political opposition from him saying, talking about this as a liberal wish list and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it's just the kind of the same dance that we saw a couple years ago with
the posturing, right?
It's the posturing. And yeah, you know, there's a couple new faces at the, you know, on the Republican side at the state level, so it's going to be a little bit interesting. There's new co-chairs of the finance committee,
right?
There's new leadership at the state senate because Scott Fitzgerald is a congressman now. But you know, Robin Voss is still kind of the main power player for the Republicans in the legislature, and a lot of that is going to be his say on things, just the same way we saw is kind of like all the debates that we've had over the past year over COVID response and COVID legislation, and you know, obviously lack thereof. I think if you're looking for any surprises though, from the budget, we're Milwaukee guys here talking. I would like to see a little bit more for Milwaukee in the budget.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like you said, there's been a lot of animosity between particularly Republicans and Milwaukee over the years, and finally you have a Democrat in office, and just hoping to see a little bit more from Milwaukee. You know, I think you guys, I listened to your podcast last week. You talked about some of the, some of the things that could go to work with the arts community, and that arts community is such a big thing in Milwaukee. You know, it's not, you know, if you're funding the arts community, odds are you're funding it in Milwaukee in this state. Right. So I think that if anything is, you know, is a little bit of a disappointment not to see more. Not that there's nothing, you know, it's better than bills passed that we've seen from Milwaukee.
Yeah, we got a fun fact for you, Dan. We got a fun fact for you. David, do you want to
share it?
We are no longer 50th in the nation in public funding for the arts. We are now 49th. But we're 49th not due to any action. We were 49th because Arizona went to zero.
So next state up, and we all picked up a notch.
That's right. So we're all going to move to Georgia, basically, and start Imagine Georgia, and then a lobby for them to zero out their fund for the arts.
You can take their spot next. Yeah.
Just making everyone else worse. Yeah. Making guys better. That's good.
Yeah. I think during the pregame, we were also, you wanted to speak a little bit to the Milwaukee Public Museum.
Yeah, that was one thing that I think really stood out from the capital projects part of the budget.
Let's talk about that.
Some money going to the museum. Yeah. Obviously, the museum needs some money. If you've been to the museum anytime recently, you're going to probably run into a wing that's closed down because there's water leaking. Mm-hmm. And the museum is great. And we should have a natural history and cultural museum for Milwaukee. And I think, the museum, I when I was at the Business Journal a couple of years ago, I reported on the beginning of kind of this debate over what's next for the museum. And I interviewed the then head of the museum, and he was saying that, Milwaukee's at risk of being the largest city in the country, if not the world, without an accredited museum.
Oh, wow.
Because they were at risk of losing their accreditation. Yeah. So I think, Evers putting that in the budget is a big deal.
Yeah.
And I think that plan that they have to, kind of merge the Children's Museum and the museum and build this new structure, it's like, it's there's a lot to like about it. Mm-hmm. It's not going to get done without a contribution from the state, because so much of it is run through county finances.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we can get into county finances too if you want, but that's a tough one too. They don't have a whole lot of money to spend on capital projects. They have a huge backlog on a lot of capital projects too. And without, as all of this connects, so without that sales tax, without Milwaukee fighting for itself to get that sales tax, it's going to be a tougher road to fund those projects too.
Milwaukee was the largest American city without a coordinating office for the arts, right, or an arts advocacy organization before we started. And 2 years ago, and really in early days, that was when the MMAC, GMC, city and county were beginning to work on the Move MKE Forward sales tax back in 2019. Mm-hmm. And so our groups came together and was like, hey, we need to like advocate for a sliver of some small percentage of what, if they are able to pass get through all the stage gates to get this thing, we ought to have a sliver of a percentage of that new revenue. Mm-hmm. And we took some meetings, and I saw Rob Henkin's PowerPoint, like his sort of Inconvenient Truth PowerPoint on city and county finances. And I went back to our groups and I was like, you know what? We're supporting this thing because we're not going to have a city. We're not going to have a county.
Yeah.
Maslow's needs, right? We're a shelter right now. We're a shelter in survival. We're not at self-actualization.
Yeah.
We're just trying to get the shelter.
And I think that was actually one thing that was surprising to me was about the budget was that they came out pretty they pre-announced the funding of the funding issue with Evers's budget, right? Like, hey, we want to give locality is an option, I thought was just I think to the broader point of like he's sort of signaling right that well he's at least open to the idea. Now the legislature's got to just make it happen.
Mm-hmm. They have signaled that that's probably not the case.
Yeah, you think they've signaled that?
I'm gonna, if that's the understatement of the podcast here.
I love it. That's so funny.
One more thing, as we walk out on this ranked choice voting bill.
Yeah. Interesting one, huh?
Yeah, right. Right.
I'm interested to see what you guys think of this one.
So we had Sarah Eskridge on the pod a couple of months ago, who's doing a lot of the work on that bill. And
Democracy Found.
Right? From Democracy Found. And, I don't know if it'll save democracy. I do know that stuff's not working right now, right? So I'm open. I'm open to ideas. And it seems like it's got some pretty interesting bipartisan support. I mean, at least the way that that Sarah describes it, right, is that like many of the folks who run for office don't really get a chance to actually do the work that they want to do because of the political dynamics, and like by creating options where people aren't worried about getting primaried, they're able to you know, potentially do the work that they were elected to do.
What do you got?
Yeah, there? I think I think it's an interesting bipartisan proposal. I thought it was a little strange that they focused it specifically on Congress and not on their own jobs. In the state they're the problem. Yeah. What about you? And then I know, you know, one of the reporters asked, what about doing this in the state legislature? And they just go, oh, we think this should be in Congress. Congress is really what's broken.
Okay. They don't want to eat their own dog food. They don't want to eat their own dog food ultimately.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. I do think in a broader sense, ranked choice voting is a really fascinating, fascinating area to explore, you know, and especially in a place like Wisconsin, where you have this polarization, where you have some candidates who are pretty far to one side or the other. Especially in Wisconsin, I think you're pretty far to the right. Especially you have, you know, it being a purple state with having some of the policies that we have that are especially far to the right, and not toward the middle, like you see, you know, some other Midwestern states. Maybe that would help. I think what would also help for a lot of people is telling the truth about the results of the election and fighting for the integrity of the votes that were legitimately cast.
Right.
I think maybe that would be top of my list if I was in an organization that had
to. The beauty of that is you don't have to pass laws for that. You could just start by telling
Dan, that's too revolutionary.
I support the results of this election.
That's too revolutionary, Dan. Tell them the truth in 2021. Are you kidding me?
But Dan, you're kind of getting one of the essences of, like, if we want, again, I might be running with scissors. You want people to vote. You want to have them believe actually that their vote matters, and that they want, they're invited to weigh in, right? And what we're seeing around the country, right, are new legislations that prevent people from wanting to vote at all, right? And is that just a classical saw that, hey, you know, one group says we don't want these people showing up, and one group is like, we need to open up as much as possible. That's, you know, that's. Mm-hmm. Ranked choice is just the cherry on top of that, you know, all that pile of that.
Yeah, and I think there are a couple places that are starting to do ranked choice. I think Alaska.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is the place that passed ranked choice, and that's you know, that'll be an interesting one to see how they do, because they have, you know, as one example, Lisa Murkowski is a very moderate senator.
Yeah.
So you know, that'll be one real interesting test case to see how things go there, but. You know, there are obviously other things that we could be doing to make a more healthy democracy. We could stop these tactics to try to limit legal voting.
Yeah.
And we could, you know, talk about, I wrote a column a year ago about we should be the conversation we should be having about voting is one that goes in the other direction. How to more, you know, do things like automatic voter registration.
Right.
Wisconsin has same day registration. Not every state has that. You know, I think that's a great benefit to Wisconsin that we have that here. So, and we should be seeking out policies like that to bring more people into the mix. And another thing that I think is going to be definitely a big issue to watch this year is gerrymandering, because we're going to get to a point where we're talking about drawing new legislative maps for the state.
Right.
The governor has started the People's Maps Commission. Mm-hmm. They're holding hearings. Not quite sure when the census data is going to be coming in now because of all the COVID stuff. Right. But that conversation has started in earnest, and they're having public hearings about it. And people are voicing what they want to say about maps. And what state law says in Wisconsin is that the governor and legislature have to agree on the maps. That's the kind of the baseline. Do you think that's going to happen?
I'm sorry, did you say maps or mask? I don't hear you right.
You know, I also wonder, like, what the role, right? When we get to that point, I do wonder what the role of artists and arts organizations are in sort of envisioning what that can look like, right? Because I think, you know, we've all seen the gerrymandering, like, memes, right, on Facebook and the like, that really, I think, underscore how crazy some of these districts are, right? Like there are districts, not in Wisconsin, but in other places where like there's a, you can drive like from east to west and like go through three different districts, which doesn't make any sense, and land back in the place you started, right? Yeah. I think there is something about like the visualization and the storytelling of this project that I think is really important for folks to understand and really sort of cut through the clutter of just, you know, all the other stuff that's out there.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think there is a, you know, if artists who are more creative than those of us in the journalism world can showcase this a little bit better than we're able to do, just, you know, because we do have some really rough districts at the state level in Wisconsin too. You know, I'm thinking of one where a Republican representative ran unopposed, and her district stretches from the far northwest side of Milwaukee to Hartford in Washington County. Wow. Which I don't know if those two are really fit in the same like
time zone,
you know, population know group. Time zone. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man.
So there's some rough ones. I mean, you know, and like I mentioned before with the suburban thing, like that's going to be where I think a lot of the disagreement's going to be, because you have, I mean, there was documentation 10 years ago where Republican state senators were emailing the head of the whoever was in charge of doing the redistricting and saying, oh, I want Brookfield in my district, but not West Milwaukee. And
right.
Like, you shouldn't have the politicians picking their maps.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And that's exactly what happened. And that's where we are. Yeah. So.
Well, we're going to give you some power right now, Dan. And we have the power, David and I, of making our guests the city's czar of arts and culture. It only lasts as long as this podcast, so it's a really brief reign, so you're going to have to work quickly. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you've already got deep, you know, people go like, well, what does this guy connect to arts and culture? It's like, this guy played at the rave at age 17. So guy's rock royalty. Him and Gordon Gano, right? You know, same sense. All right, so...
Basically,
what would be the first policy that you pass for arts and culture in the city?
I think any policy like that in this day and age has to start with equity, and I think funding Black indigenous people of color, funding artwork in those communities has to be the top priority.
Yeah,
has to be.
Yep.
And I think, especially in a place like Milwaukee, where you have these segregated areas, you know, even funding, like, I know we're all virtual now, but it's not going to be forever. The vaccines are rocking right now. It's not going to be forever.
Yeah.
I think putting some brick and mortar arts and culture facilities and funding them like crazy in the north side, south side of Milwaukee, and some of these communities of color that have not had type of brick and mortar arts investments in their communities. I think that's number one on the list for me. Mm.
Well, Dan, even though your term is about to end, I think it's fair to say Dave and I are definitely in Imagine's very committed to that notion of making sure that vibrancy happens in all our zip codes. And what I'm hearing you say is that what helps is actually having places, physical places to gather, physical places to practice and to produce together and make sense and meaning together, that matters, right? And how do we invest in that, right? And that's something I think we're all committed to for sure. And so we gotta get you back on the pod so you can have another run at it, because I like those policies you're talking about. Sure. Before that happens though, we want our audience to find you. So Dan, how can the audience find you and take in the work of the Recombobulation Area?
Yeah, well, I write and publish the Recombobulation Area on Substack. So you can find me on there. As you mentioned before, I'm on Twitter pretty often. You can, even beyond the political takes, we can get the occasional, you know, live tweet of a Bucks game or random observation about traffic in Milwaukee or something like that. I try to bring some sense of humor to it, so it's not super heavy. Harsh political topics.
So perhaps the most important question of the day, given that you heard last week's podcast, will you be my hashtag Dan for David?
Absolutely, I will.
Woo! Yes,
our long regional nightmare is over.
Is over.
We got it, Dan for David. Everyone listening, call it off. Call it off, everybody. We got one. This is all an elaborate setup to make sure you landed a Dan for David.
We did it.
All the hosts
completed the arc.
You completed it. Dan Schaefer, you can find him at Dan R. Schaefer. You got the recombobulation area. You can catch it on Substack and subscribe because it's a worthy investment in independent journalism and making sure great writers and scribes like Dan are doing the work. So Dan, thanks again for joining us. And we'd love to have you back again sometime soon. Hopefully when Wisconsin moves up, or maybe before Wisconsin moves up, because I don't know how long these things take, but we'd love to get your takes on how that was at, how we were able to shake some more money out of the tree for arts.
And yeah, absolutely. I appreciate all the kind words and thanks for having me on. I had a good time. A train, would you, could you want a train? Not in a train, not in a tree, not in a car, Sam, let me be.
I would not, could not in a box. I would not, could not with a box. Well, that was lovely having Dan on. And he was so great, given that he's a 6 week old.
Yeah.
Doing pretty well.
Yeah. Having a dog kicks my butt. I can't imagine what having a 6 week old is like.
Yeah. I mean, my kids are ninth grade and seventh grade, and the way the human race works, they make you forget that time. So I forgot what that was like. So, or else we wouldn't have more kids. Right. So credit to Dan for being cognizant and thoughtful, as he usually is. And I liked the way he really named, like, Milwaukee's got to defend itself.
Yeah.
I think he really lifted up something there that I think we've sort of spoken to, that it doesn't assert its, the city could assert itself more with regards to its identity and its importance, particularly around arts and culture, right? There's something to that. So
there is something interesting too about like what he was talking about like, you know, the conflict averseness, right? Of like, we don't really want to like sort of stir the boat, and yet our region is our state politics is also so polarizing, which seems counterintuitive to like, mm-hmm. I don't want to like stir the boat, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know where that kind of sense of like upper Midwest pragmatism has gone, right? Like you mentioned you had lived in the Twin Cities,
yeah,
which sort of has some of that upper Midwest Scandinavian pragmatism,
common sensism, right? This, yeah, sort of practicality, let's get it done.
There really is, I think, a sense of like not wanting to be seen, right? Sort of continuing to fly under the radar here, maybe potentially. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would love to have him back, as he's a keen observer and pundit and very thoughtful. I appreciated his arts czar reign, too brief, in terms of his desire for, again, more equitable funding and making sure that we get all our zip codes vibrant with arts and culture. So great to have a colleague like him in the work. You know who's also great?
Our listeners, certainly. Yes.
Thanks for listening, everyone. If you enjoyed this podcast and if you'd like to support the pod, please share it with others, post about it on social, or leave a rating and review, or contact us directly at pod@imaginemke.org.
Imagine This Podcast is a team effort produced, edited, and hosted by MacArthur Antigua, David Lee, and Lindsay Sheridan, and is the flagship of the Imagine MKE Podcast Network. Make sure you also listen and subscribe to Black Imagination and back episodes of Arts Forward MKE, all of which can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts.
To catch all of the latest from Imagine MKE, hit us up at Twitter and Instagram @imagine_MKE, or on Facebook, Imagine MKE.
Thanks again, and we'll catch you next Tuesday when Wendell Willis, the president of the MPS Foundation, joins us to talk about arts education and arts funding. And if you're playing along in the Imagine This Podcast drinking game, get ready to call 911, as Mac and Wendell, two Wildcat alums of a certain age, will no doubt mention Northwestern University at least 100 times. If I absquatulate from the pod to recombobulate myself, you will all know why.
Spread far the fame of our fair name. Go Northwestern, win that game.
Lindsay, hello. It's Chris Rankin here. Percy Weasley from the Harry Potter films. Yes, Hogwarts head boy. Gryffindor school prefect. And everybody's...
Oh, my God. this is the
well, seventh favorite Weasley child, Lindsay, if we're being honest about it. Now, my darling, I had an owl arrive with me over the weekend, and I'm so sorry that it's a little bit late, but I know that you were turning 30 on the 27th of February, so I wanted to drop by and wish you a belated, but nevertheless heartfelt happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Lindsay. Happy birthday to you. And I am sending you my love 50 house points right there for whichever Hogwarts house you feel you belong to the most. Now, I have a request from you, Lindsay. I know it's your birthday and you should be the one receiving, not giving. But I feel like the world needs to see your Harry Potter fan fiction. Yes, because you see, David and Mac, they've told me all about your Harry Potter fan fiction, which I know they know very little about because nobody is allowed to read it, apparently. But I think it's time to share it with the world. I think we could all do with a laugh right now, Lindsay. And your Harry Potter fan fiction might just be the ticket we need to lift our spirits after a, let's face it, quite crazy year. Now, I hope that you had a magical birthday, and I hope you have a happy, healthy, and of course, darling, safe year ahead of you. Wherever you are in the world, I hope we get to see you soon. Take care. Loads of love. Mwah. Bye.